We're now going to move to our shared future panel, and I'm going to ask Ross Hussey to come up and act as facilitator. And I'd like to welcome Duncan Morrow, the Chief Executive of Northern Ireland Community Relations Council. Duncan, you're very welcome. And other panel members, Bill Manwaring, our candidate for West Belfast, Leslie McCauley, our candidate for East Londonderry, and Kenny Donaldson, our candidate for Fermanagh and South Tyrone. Please make your way to the platform.
Sure that I'm going to get a comfortable seat. Roy, you look nearly as comfortable as I am sitting here, so this is the way it's going to be done. I feel a bit like Michael Parkinson, you know, with all these very important people sitting here with me. And we do have a very important subject, and we are going to be talking about our shared future. But because we have Duncan Morrow with us from the Community Relations Council, I would ask Duncan to go over to the lectern and introduce himself and have a bit of an opening gambit with you.
Thank you very much, Ross. Thank you very much to all of you. I'm delighted to be here. We certainly, in the Community Relations Council, really value the opportunity to talk to people who have that commitment to politics, because it is our conviction that really, especially in these times of devolution, that what happens in terms of the commitment of political parties has taken on really central significance, obviously, in what actually happens here. So the opportunity for us as a body to engage with all of you is a huge privilege. And so I'm delighted and thank you very much for having this debate today on this theme of a shared future, which obviously we in the Community Relations Council have a particular interest and responsibility for. I feel I should start, when I look at you all out there, with that old joke about what the Pope said to the Dalai Lama, that you should spend some time taking the sense of your audience before you really speak to them, and I have to say you're a very rough-looking crowd. But having said all that, let me say this. We, as this generation, and I suppose it's my generation, in many ways have to stand back just a second to say that the huge efforts, and I know that those efforts were right across the society and in politics and from leaders of political parties, including this one, who made massive strides and efforts to try to bring an end to what was really a truly horrific chapter in our history. And we in my generation have an opportunity which probably was not there in any way for previous generations, and certainly for the generation that just preceded mine, because we have an opportunity at last to build a shared future which is not based just on being enemies or people who threaten each other, but as partners. And that is a massive opportunity, and it's an opportunity which we dare not squander. And I suppose if I have one single message, it is that we should not squander the opportunity of building a real and genuine open society, because the alternatives we already know, and the cost of threat and fear in this society cannot be overestimated. Just this week, I was watching the BBC reporting that the per capita cost of drugs in Northern Ireland is something like 25% to 30% higher than it is in England, and that the particular costs of sleeping pills and tranquilizers are the particular drugs in which we have a terrible lead. And in the report, the BBC acknowledged that this had something to do with the real human ongoing legacy of trauma, of terror, and of the things that people have to live with every day. So when people talk about peace as if it's some kind of nice harmonic hum, and there's a tendency for it all to go down into that happy-clappy end of the equation, Let me just say that actually, in real terms, what it is we cannot, in my view, as a moral and political community, allow that kind of life and that kind of dependency to go on without trying to do something about it. In the Community Relations Council, we have every day to do with the victims of violence. And I have to say that when we're standing, or I am having to stand in front of people like that, I am absolutely aware that the Community Relations Council has very little to say except, against the backdrop of what you have been through, what can we do to make sure, first of all, that it doesn't happen again, and second of all, to do justice to the care that needs to be given, and third of all, to acknowledge that some people paid an enormously heavy price for what went on here. Because when I'm talking about a shared future, I'm also talking about the possibility to address the legacy of the past. And that means a whole lot of things. It means committing, and not in the short term, to the care of the victims. It means dismantling some of the structures that built up here in a context of threat, particularly where communities become dependent, if you like, and interdependent with types of behaviour, and particularly paramilitary organisation, which can have no place in a long-term democratic society. We have an opportunity here to embrace an open and tolerant, culturally diverse society, no longer defining ourselves simply as not them, but as us. Moving beyond even just tolerance and respect to a possibility, maybe, of generosity and welcome. And above all, dismantling the notion that threat and fear is an okay way to live. We in the Community Relations Council did a piece of research work, two pieces of research work, which have always stuck with me. One looked at Protestant communities in border areas. And the stories that came out of that talked about people who were unable to leave their houses or felt unable to go into their village to participate in ordinary, everyday activities out of sheer threat and terror. And that went on for years. We also did a piece of work about Catholic communities living in minorities, people saying they dared not hang out their washing for fear that their windows would be put in their village, because things, the sporting affiliations they had, would cost them. I don't think any of that is acceptable in the kind of future that any of us want. And I don't believe that we should turn the opportunity that we have now, turn away from the opportunity we have now, without making sure that that kind of threat and that kind of fear is absolutely unacceptable going on into the future. So having said that, having talked about the backdrop and the legacy, let's talk about what the opportunity is for the future. We have a chance and we have the necessity now to build a modern and open economy. But let me tell you this, we will not be able to attract investment if this is a place where people are worried about the long-run stability of their investment. The policy of community of cohesion, sharing and integration is not just a soft, touchy-feely policy. It is an insistence that we create the conditions that investment becomes something which might be possible and even desirable. In modern economies, the key issue is, are you attractive? Attractive for investors and attractive for the brightest and best people to come. We need to build a society which is attractive for people who want to invest here if we're ever to get out of the public sector dependency, which has been, at one level, both the answer to the fact that our economy was being destroyed, but at the same time is now our curse because we can't go on with it. And so if we're serious about building an investment-led economy, we have to talk about how we create a shared, open society. These are not either ors, these are both ands. Can I say as well that if we want the brightest and best of our children to stay here and to return here. This needs to be a place worth living in. Too many of the people I meet tell me that they tell their children you'd be better off working and living somewhere else. And I think that if that's a message which even flickers through our mind, we should consider. We have to change the environment and the context of this place. Because I know that many of the people in this room know that many of their children are going to go, and that they cannot hand over heart say, this would be a better place for you to come. So again, a cohesion, sharing and integration policy has nothing to do with touchy-feely softiness. It has to do with the core interests of every family in this place. The third thing is, if we are to become a bright and attractive place, our universities need to be places which attract some of the brightest and the best and the entrepreneurs and all of those people who might, in the end, build the kind of industries which have long-run stability. I remember in 2005, and I had a hand in trying to mediate something which went badly wrong on the White Rock Road in major riots in 2005. And following that, I was told that the universities experienced a reversal in the increase in the number of people who'd wanted to come here and study as postgraduate students. You know, these events, which we measure in terms of how much it costs the police, have huge costs, not just in the short run, and not just in the threat that is intimidation of police officers, which is bad enough, or in even the costs, and this year's Ardoyne riots cost somewhere in the region of £2 million over 3 days, but in the long run damage it does to the reputation of a place like this as a place worth coming to. Now, I know that my previous chair, Eamon McCartan, got into big trouble this week for saying that nobody was coming for the Olympics because of the reputation of Northern Ireland, and I don't want to get into the same trouble. And I want to say that he's onto something. He's onto something, which is that it certainly does us no good if our reputation is as a basket case in which you put yourself and your people at risk. And so doing things to ensure that we never go back, doing things to ensure that this is an open and tolerant place, doing things to ensure that we have law and we don't go back to paramilitarism as the only way to defend communities, doing things to tackle the sense of enmity and not being partners, isn't just an added-on extra. It's part of getting us to where we have to go to. And I suppose to say that, I want to say that we have to end the idea, somehow or other, that the only way we can be safe is by keeping the others out. And part of that is a new pact that purely political means is the only way forward. That we will protect each other's rights now to go where we want to go, to say, as long as it's peaceful, what we want to say, to wear what we have to wear, and to play the sports and to do the things that everybody wants to do. If we're not able to do that, I have to say, essentially we commit ourselves in the long run to living behind walls, to having to put additional money behind security, to having to always have twice the number of police officers than you need for constabularies in England or for people south of the border in order just to have basic public safety. These things are not cost-free activities. The cohesion, sharing and integration strategy is not just something which should be desirable but not essential, but absolutely at the core of a programme to say this is an open, fair, tolerant and welcoming society that we all want. And when people say to me, you know, we want to tackle poverty, I want to say this. The truth is that the people who pay the most in this society for sectarianism are the poorest. That's the bottom line of it. Anybody with get up and go, if they have a choice, gets up and goes. If what it means, if your only option is to live up against a wall and to live with people threatening your house and your livelihood. Getting investment into some of the most difficult parts of Northern Ireland is impossible. If it would mean that people would have to travel and be in fear of their lives in going to their jobs. So these things aren't, again, either ors. Tackling these issues is part of building a society in which we can begin to tackle poverty. So again, getting investment, building a fair and open society, and tackling poverty, core goals of any democratic society, all depend on us beginning to connect these things to tackling the issues that are in the past in Northern Ireland. So, having said all of that, I suppose what it looks to me like, what does success look like? Success in the end looks like, first of all, that people feel free to be who they are, to be able to engage in economic and social activity as they wish, and to be able to live, work and play anywhere in this society in a free and open way. And policy towards that needs to be understood as taking the opportunity of now, because if we miss this opportunity and slip back, it won't come easily again, because the sense of depression that will sink on this place will be nearly terminal. So let me say this. The Cohesion, Sharing and Integration Strategy is therefore, for the Community Relations Council, a matter of extreme importance, and it needs to be thought through. It needs to build on what has already been achieved, and it needs to assert, without doubt, that the future here is shared, that apartheid has never yet been benign if it has to be patrolled and people have to be kept out. It is simply not right that if somebody moves into a house and they are of the wrong sort and people stand outside their door and put them out, that our only response is still that we move the person that's intimidated and aren't able to protect them against the people who are trying to put them out. It won't do for a democratic society to rest with that and to pretend that everybody just wanted to be apart. Actually, that wasn't the case. And we need to be honest with ourselves. These are serious matters. So what we want in the Community Relations Council is to ensure that this opportunity of a CSI is not missed, that we don't get a weak policy, that we get a policy which says this must address a new notion of community safety. We have to connect this to economics. We have to connect this to what we're going to do about housing. We have to connect this to the future of education. We have to connect this to the future of what we're going to do around all the cultural disputes that are still there. And that this executive needs to make sure that we don't miss this possibility by simply waving through a weak policy, but we use this as an opportunity to build a coherent policy which ties up all the rest of the issues that have to be tackled. So let me say this. This won't be achieved unless there is the commitment of all of the political parties to put change in terms of the past and in terms of enmity behind us, to take the opportunity of now to acknowledge the issues, to recognise, as we do, this isn't going to happen overnight, that it happens against the backdrop of enormous fear and threat, but that that's not an excuse not to do something about it, and that we need to get something more than just words and warm ideas, but serious policy onto the agenda so that people here and the next generation know that a shared future isn't just an aspiration, but it's actually something which we talk about across the globe as an achievement. Thank you very much indeed.
Very well, ladies and gentlemen. We're going to do a question and answer session, and maybe at the end I might just throw a wobbly and ask a question myself. You never know. But the first question I have is from Terry Medill in Antrim South. So, Terry, if you are there, if we can get a microphone over to you to get the question asked. I thought Bobby McConnell was going to storm the stage there for a minute. No, okay, Terry.
The question I have is in the shrinking funding that's now going to be available for community relations. how are you going to make sure that that gets to where it has to be? Because in my experience, being involved in some training courses and things like this, a lot of money has been poured into training people who don't want to do community relations. Most of the courses I've been on has been as an interested party, sitting in a room full of school teachers who are there because it's a day off.
Interesting question. So I will just throw that immediately to Duncan Morrow.
First of all, I feel your pain. This is something I suppose that has been the bane of our life. It's getting people to see that community relations isn't just some activities of a few nice people meeting other people in a room. And I suppose that's what I'm trying to get at here is there is a hugely important community side to this because the impacts are really in real lives and real places, so we need to start tackling some stuff. But we probably now need to stop thinking that the only things that need to be done are by small people in local communities, but we need to build on some of those things. We need to start talking about, you know, what does this mean for our town centres? Can everybody access our town centres freely? Can they actually, can the assets that we build, our theatres, our cinemas, things like McDonald's, are they actually open to people? I went and did some work in Lurgan with a group of young people, and it still stuck with me, actually, in which it became clear in the conversations, and people can correct me who know Lurgan better than me, but the broad picture I got was this, was that Lurgan Park, which I have to say I was ignorant of till I went to look at it and found it was one of the most stunning pieces of urban landscape that I've ever seen, was essentially not regarded by the Catholic part of the population as a place they went. So, first, for the Protestant young people, they told me, after the toilets we don't go, there's a McDonald's up at the other end of the road that they won't go to. So simple things like a McDonald's are not actually open to half of the young people in the community. And at night, the town centre is essentially empty because it's a standoff zone. Now, the consequences of that are obviously for the young people. The consequences of that are obviously for the businesses. The consequences of that are for that Lurgan does not develop in the way as a town that it should in terms of the huge asset that's already there, like this park, for example. The consequences are of a town centre which is economically dead and has no nighttime economy. And what I was told, now if somebody wants to tell me different, is that there's no cinema and that people go out of Lurgan to go to activities in different directions in different ways. Now, so, first of all, I don't think we're asking for lots of additional money for lots of community groups to meet. I do think that we have to assume now that in all of community life, community relations, as in meeting other people around the neighbourhood, will be part of normal. And I want to mainstream that now. I don't think it should be additional activity. I think it should be part of what everybody does, just as what we experience is normal. Second of all, I think that we need to be putting into discussions about how do we connect this not so much into more money, but using the discussions in towns like Lurgan to actually tackle some of these questions so that we see real changes for real people. And then at the third level to say that we get leadership from community and from political leadership to say these are priorities, not second-rate issues, because they make a huge difference to the people of this community. So I suppose these are my priorities now.
Just in my job, and just to clarify what my job is on a day-to-day basis, I'm not always in heels and beads. I'm out with communities. I'm working with them at where they're at. Some are not ready to take those steps that I would like them to take forward, and that's fine, and I respect that. But just let me give you one example that happened to me this week that actually I cried when they said yes to it. I'm working in a loyalist estate in a rural town, and I put to them, would you like the opportunity to meet Republican ex-prisoners? And I honestly thought, it's too much. And I've worked with this group. They trust me. They know me. I have taken them through a process. And I thought, I think they're ready to go to the next level because this is not touchy-feely stuff. And they debated and they discussed it. and they come back, and this week they said, yes, we want to meet with Republican ex-prisoners. And these are loyalists that I never thought ever would have happened to say yes. They are ready to take that step. And that's where we are. That's where some communities are. And I think it's really important as politicians that we are leading, we are showing leadership, we are showing vision, which this document lacks, I have to say. It lacks in action points and steps. That needs to be clarified. But the people on the ground need to see political leadership. And a lot of people are ready to take those steps. Now, some aren't, and that's fine.
Bill?
I think the point on funding is very important. In my day job, I work with a charity that focuses on individuals who suffer from alcohol or substance abuse. And my organisation has recently received funding from the CRC, victims' money, to be able to work with individuals and families who often are transgenerational victims of our troubles. These are people who maybe didn't experience the issues directly themselves, but their parents or their grandparents have been directly involved. I think what we need to do with our funding, just to cover this point first, is to make sure that our funding is going to those who are best placed to get impact on the ground and create benefit for those who need it most. I think we have to use the more limited resources we're going to be getting to make sure those resources are more targeted. And I must say, I'd just like to thank Duncan and the CRC for the work they do to ensure that funding does get to groups that need the funding to be able to address the issues on the ground that they're working with. I think the broader issue is very much how we get individuals with their own experiences of the troubles and their own issues around personal identity or community identity to be able to come together, to feel comfortable breaking down those personal barriers without feeling that by involving themselves in something that challenges them or their community is stigmatizing them to a place outside of them and their community. And I think something we need to be doing is promoting the fact that it's a positive step to move forward and to look to the future rather than to worry about those you're leaving in the past.
Kenny?
Okay, Ross, thanks very much. I suppose, and I mean this with respect, the fact that Duncan Morrow is here today and is extolling the same language and same virtues, if you like, that he would have been done 10 years ago. And 10 years ago, you may have been viewed by some, Duncan, as an intellect, well-meaning, but naive. And to think that today in 2010 you're here and people are moving on your ground, what you have assumed back then, I think it says a lot for the CRC's ethos. So you've won the battle on that one. But I suppose a point that comes to me in this is that how will we ever know we actually have made it in Northern Ireland? When 1998 came, I think a lot of people thought that the taps were turned on and we were going to get back to some semblance of normality. But there's a great uncle of mine who's passed away now, and he was a wise man. And what he said was this, that you will only know that Northern Ireland has made it as a normal society. Whenever you meet someone for the first time, you don't spend the first 5 minutes trying to work out what they are. And it's not that you're in any way being sectarian for that, but it's a protectionist attitude. That you can have an open discussion with someone who is completely different to you, and they may say that they're going to a GAA match, you could be going to an Orange parade, and that's okay to say that. On that point, and it's been very much to the fore in the media around the GAA and this issue of symbolism, what have you, and our party leader has been pulled over the coals in this. But let's get real on this. There are four stages of development in Northern Ireland. There's firstly what we have in terms of conflict. We then have a peaceful, yet, if you want to call it an isolated coexistence. We then have integration and interdependence. And then we have assimilation. Assimilation, in my view, is not where we want to go. Where we want to banish almost our histories, our identities, and become some fraudulent new force, all of us. That's not what we are. Have pride and respect and integrity for who you come from, but actually be prepared to look at the other man and say, you have an entitlement to come from there as well.
I think there's no doubt that some people see community relations as something you have to turn up and do this course, because that's another tick in a box. I see Councillor Wilson sitting down there, and because of him, I was sent on a course which lasted a full year. Probably because it took me that long to be nice to people. But I have to say, it was one of the most eye-opening courses I've ever been on. It was actually Peace 3 funded, and it was the Fellowship of Mazzines. And when you can see that people from out-and-out Republican backgrounds can accept that they had relatives who served in the British Army, and they can accept the reasons why those people served in the British Army, and you can see them remembering those people, there are steps that are going forward. But unfortunately, there's a lot of time that we mark time. But an interesting question and interesting answers to that. I'm now going to throw this to the audience. And again, I'm always blinded by lights. Many have once said I should have saw the light a long time ago, but I'm being blinded by lights. It reminds me of my time in the police, and I should be standing here with a red light trying to maybe stop this vehicle that's coming at me. For all I know, Peter Robinson's driving it. But anyway, I understand there are questions in the audience, so if you raise your hand and we get a microphone to you, we will do that. Oh, good Lord. Oh, God. All right, we'll take Andy Wilson anyway. Go on.
Thanks for that, Ross. That's marvellous. My prepared question has really been addressed by Duncan Morrow, so I'm going to throw a googly to all members of the panel. Could they give me in one sentence their definition of a shared future?
A googly. As well, my cousin Mike's still playing for Australia. Right, we will start, I think, with Kenny, because he seems to be raiding here furiously, and he's just cursed you there. So we'll start with Kenny, and we'll work our way towards Duncan. I don't need to answer this one, so we'll start with Kenny.
One sentence. This is tough. For me, shared future in Northern Ireland is one community, and it's about understanding that whenever we work together, all of us in it, for a common purpose, that we can get the best out of all ourselves.
Go on, Bill.
For me, I guess it would be accepting others and expecting them to accept us.
Leslie?
To me, one sentence is very difficult. To me, it's about living together as one community and respecting difference.
Duncan?
I'll give you a sentence in a minute, but I did research on this. I have when I was in the University of Ulster, we asked people what they thought community relations was, and I have to say it showed me that in the end, most people saw behind it a wolf behind sheep's clothing. To be honest with you, we asked some people; they told us actually what it was an ill-disguised plot to rumble unionists into United Ireland against their will. That was number one. Then there was the other side, which was it was a covert action part of British government counterinsurgency strategy. You might imagine who said that. And then the civil service, the head of the civil service, I don't know if he was the head of the civil service because I would identify him, but he wasn't actually the head of the civil service, but he was a senior civil servant. We asked him what's community relations, and he said, the cucumber sandwiches of policy, by which he meant soft and chewy and not very nice. I have come to the conclusion that a shared future says at one level something very simple, which is we're going to build a future with others. And if that sounds too simple, put it the other way around, which is the history of this place has been trying to almost build the future as if the others don't exist. Once you start to build the future on the basis that we're going to make it with the others, in a sense, it changes everything, because that has to be factored in to policy across the board. So if you ask me what my definition of it looks like, it is for me that we as a community have taken the conclusion that whatever the outcome we have here, we're going to do it with each other as opposed to trying to exclude each other. And that's a fundamentally, it's to emphasise, if you like, the hope in this community rather than the fear.
Shared future, Andy, is when everybody realises we are right and votes Ulster Unionist. I wasn't going to answer that, but I thought I should. Have we another question in the audience?
Some lost down there.
Over here, somewhere.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Ross, and thank you to the panel for their questions so far. My question is quite technical, and it's about the enforcement of these principles. I would just like to ask the panel, do you think we have a strict enough equality regime in Northern Ireland?
Strict enough?
We'll start with Bill.
Do we have strict enough equality regime?
I don't believe that a strict equality regime is what we need to be looking for. It's not about having a regime that forces people to recognise each other. It's about creating opportunities for people to understand and accept and want to work with each other. Probably doesn't answer your question, but that's where I stand on it.
And I have to say, I mean, I totally, you know, agree with that. And, you know, sometimes it hampers good work being done as well. But we don't want to force. It's not about forcing you to learn about the other side. It's not about that. But I find there is, in general, a willingness to learn, and people want to learn. And can I just say as well, learning about other cultures, other faiths, leads to your own culture and faith being enhanced and enriched. It doesn't dilute it at all. It's being enriched. Actually, one of the reasons why I'm sitting on this platform today, because I've done so much of that work.
Duncan?
I think that it's absolutely vital that everybody in this community knows that they are of equal value, and that any notion of discrimination or of exclusion on the basis of some presumed characteristic is simply not acceptable in the modern world. That's not where we are, and it's not where we can go. And there's no doubt in my mind that this interconnectedness, this work that I'm involved in, as has already been alluded to, is tied up with a whole load of jargon and a whole lot of ideology. But let me say this. I am absolutely sure that a shared future depends absolutely on not just a law, but actually an assumption that we will treat each other equally and that equality in this kind of access is an absolute given. So equality is core to good relations. On the other hand, I would want to put it the other way around, which is people will not treat each other equally if they think we're enemies. Because to be honest with you, you don't want to treat people who wish you harm equally. So good relations and equality belong together. It is my view that in an ideal world, and this is a personal view, all of these things should be done as a matter of almost taken for granted, rather than that they're done through law. I am absolutely sure that we still need laws and frameworks within which to take ourselves, but I am also sure that this issue, that we will have arrived when all citizens of this place know that they're of equal value, that they're treated equally, and that the impediments that are put in their place are ones which belong to everybody but are not directed at them in the form of discrimination in any way.
Kenny?
Thanks, Ross. I suppose I'm going to make a party political point here. The equality agenda obviously belongs more so to one political party than others in Sinn Féin. And I think it's no small coincidence that the CSI strategy at its heart, it is totally corrupt, because the doctrine of that particular movement is about ensuring that we don't have any natural integration in Northern Ireland. Don't forget that the aim of the Republican movement is to actually create the circumstances where the Northern Ireland state is overthrown. No one should ever forget that. Sadly, their partners in government and who are joined at the hip to them are also of the ilk of ourselves alone and are essentially two sides of the one coin. So what we have to do is to reassert, I believe, responsibility and citizenship foremost within actually our lives in Northern Ireland. Going forward, the Northern Ireland public have to take a great deal of credit in having sucked in those parties into the centre of the political system. They did so very, very intelligently. But the message that has to come from this party going forward is that actually that's not needed anymore. And if you want to give us the ammunition to actually finish the job that we started, to move this place to the next level, then actually it's the middle ground that needs to come back to the fore. And until that happens, this place is going to be two different countries essentially within one. That's what it is.
I'm not going to comment on equality. However, I will. I think equality at times has become an industry. I think equality at times has become an industry for some people to peddle, for some people to stir up, and for some people to actually make a very good living out of it. I certainly have no problems with equality on the grounds of disability, on the grounds of sex, on any of those natures at all. But then when we go down the lines of religious discrimination, there are some people who are certainly making an industry out of it. And you are either this or that. You can get a job because you are this or that. And why? Whatever happened to the best person for the job? Why should somebody have to employ somebody because they, he, she, or it happens to be a certain religion, and that is the figure that you have to get for that job? And we have seen it in policing, and unfortunately, we should not have an imposed 50-50 situation in that type of scenario. And at times, as I say, people are making an industry out of it. You are Protestant Catholic. Are you? We don't have a society that's Protestant Catholic. We have a society that's Protestant Catholic non-believer. We have an increased number of non-Christian denominations. However, I'll not go off on that tangent or I'll be here until tomorrow. And some of you, I think, want to go home. So, again, back to the roaming mic. If you can grab somebody down the back. I'm trying to avoid Bobby McConnell. But maybe, no, I think we'll go to Bobby McConnell because we know that he's going to say something controversial. You wait till you get the microphone, because with the microphone I can switch you off. Hold on. Basil, we're going to Bobby McConnell. God.
Well, I would agree with Kenny that, you know, we have come a long way, and all credit to you, Duncan, and you know, for the efforts that you've put into it. But what do you think, as a panel, is our biggest challenge for the future, and how should we address that challenge?
Our biggest challenge for the future, Leslie.
Well, there's many challenges. One of them being is to get this right. Is to get this right so it will work. I mean, I see this as the overarching principle to everything that we were talking about today, to the economy, to education. And, of course, my beloved East Londonderry with the tourism that we're trying to attract. If this is right, we will get that inward investment for tourism, business, and so on. So this is very, very important that we get this right.
Duncan?
To identify a single challenge, of course, a huge risk, because there's a lot of them out there. And, I mean, you could go for economics, you could go for the fact that there are... education remains a huge issue. You could take any of these things. I've come to the conclusion that we still have a very big issue, which is that the past is a massive obstacle to the future. In other words, we have to jump over something here, which is people have grounds for their fears. People have grounds for their fears. These didn't come out of nowhere. People know in this community that terrible things happen to people, and they have done... And are still at risk at various places as well, by the way, so I don't want to say it's over either. And for that reason, the kind of things that we've done defensively against each other are usually understood as good common sense. We didn't do it because we had to, we did it because we were forced to. I have to say, for example, that is why, you know, it's good common sense in this place not to go into the past. Because as soon as we go into the past, we get lost there. And I'm actually not suggesting we do. But I am suggesting that the big obstacle is taking the risk. Is actually taking the risk. In education, can we do some interesting experiments with each other about how it might be possible? That's not about forcing everybody into single type of schools or integrated schools. But it is saying, you know something? We need to be freed up to do some things differently. Maybe it's share campuses, maybe it's share sports facilities, maybe it's share expertise in languages or science labs, maybe it's have village schools which are co-organized rather than have buses all over the place. But all that's joined up by one issue, which is the big issue is, can we take the risk to be partners of people who were previously people who we thought it was perfectly okay to defend ourselves against. And I think this is where this question of leadership comes. It is really imperative that in politics, first of all, that where there are risks, they're named and identified and ways forward are found. And second of all, that we take steps in everything we do to give people confidence that they no longer have to think all the time, first of all, about the threat that's there for them, but can go on in confidence and do what Kenny says, simply meet people on the basis that this is somebody with whom I want to do business or who I'm meeting, without having to calculate all the time, is there a risk?
Although I do think there is a challenge in how we deal with the past. We can't ignore, but you know, and healing through remembering is doing great work around conversations and dealing with the past.
Tim McGarry pointed out last night, when we start going looking into the past, we don't know how far back to look, and then we never stop. We'll always find somebody that we hate. Kenny?
Actually, Duncan took the words out of my mouth in terms of the past being the greatest challenge. I'm involved in a number of organisations that look very much so at that issue, and I do think that it isn't dozens of people. There are hundreds and thousands of people in Northern Ireland who feel particularly sore at what they see as a lack of justice being delivered for them in this life. They haven't received that as yet, and it doesn't help whenever you have piecemeal inquiries going on left, right and centre. And for them, there seems to almost be an avalanche of stories and a persona brought up about a narrative that happened here that they are not willing to accept or to be comfortable with. So I would ask the question, people always say, can we afford not to draw a line under the past? I actually believe that we cannot afford to draw a line under the past. There has to be a meaningful end game to it all. And I think that if we ignore that, we ignore that at our peril.
I think Kenny has certainly hit the nail on the head on that particular line. It's something that we will ignore at our peril because it will come back to haunt us. Again, have we any...
Ross, can I?
Oh, sorry, I forgot about you, didn't I?
It was very hard to do.
It wasn't deliberate.
Very hard to do. As you know, I'm standing as the Ulster Unionist candidate in that very safe seat of West Belfast.
Is that why Jerry's...
That's why I told Jerry, stop picking up both of us, and he had to go. But the challenge that I see in West Belfast, and it applies to all of Northern Ireland, is removing those remaining gatekeepers who are stopping us from achieving what we want to do. And I mean that primarily in the two parties who will attempt anything to stop us from moving this country to where it should be. Last Thursday, I was invited to Poleglass to attend an event organized by young women from that community who were launching their own peace symbol. It was a really, really interesting event. And these young girls, all from Catholic upbringings, produced this symbol that gave messages that they wanted to put out in relation to our future, Northern Ireland's future. One of the messages was to make mixed marriages acceptable because I want to choose who I fall in love with. And that, for me, just shows how our young people get it. How so many of the people we have here get it. What I don't understand is why the two biggest parties sitting in Stormont don't get it.
Sorry, can I also...
No, you can't, because I'm going to be on to the last question and not often get the chance
peace
to say
to
shut up.
There needs to be a strategy for the peace walls, to bring the peace walls down.
Totally.
But my mum will always get the last word in.
Okay. East Londonderry, nil. We have one final question, and again, if somebody can show me a hand, if we get one final question in. Okay. Here's the microphone I brought myself. What are we going to do?
Thanks very much, Ross. And the answer to that, Bill, is because the two largest parties don't want to have any change. It's as simple as that. What we've identified, it seems to be through the panel, is that what we have is a legalistic system of equality whereby separate but equal will satisfy far too many people in terms of the dominant political representatives at the minute. We seem to have an agreed panel saying we need to move on to what's a genuinely shared future where we don't require on law We require respect and tolerance, and we don't require it to be a legalistic approach. How do we move from A to B? How do we grow trust so that people can leave the legalistic approach behind and embrace respect through trust?
Dunk.
Well, the answer about eating an elephant is, you know, one bite at a time, to be honest with you. What actually I think in the Community Relations Council we want to see is, at one level, you're always arguing for big high-level things, a policy, a strategy, all of these things. It doesn't mean anything unless it's turned into actual facts on the ground. And I think when we were looking at the CSI document as proposed, our biggest criticism of the document is it doesn't actually spell out in detail what you're going to do and what this looks like. Now, I suppose we could start talking in detailed policy terms and you'd go on forever, but I'll give you two or three examples of the kind of thing I'm talking about. First of all, I think in terms of our public institutions and assets, we should be looking to make them all very much open access places. Now, what does that look like? For example, stuff like how you run very basic things like town centres. Are they safe for everybody to go to? Are they open, accessible? Do we have good... do we have evidence that everybody's using those facilities? So, for example, in Derry, Londonderry, is everybody going into the city centre? Is it open to everybody? Is there a nighttime economy developing there for everybody? And so on. So there's a kind of public space development issue. On education, there are lots of ideas, actually, and particularly I think the one that captured us was in the Bain report, quite simple things around how you deal with the school estate problem that we have now. So we have far too many desks. Can we find creative ways to use this as an opportunity, not to force sharing, not to force some kind of artificialness in people's relationships, but to say, in OMA, there is an army site which could become used as a shared campus where people rub along each other in a different type of a way. Where, for example, if we need to develop sports facilities for towns or rural areas, can we open up the schools? Can we use those? Can we share those as an ordinary, everyday kind of basic behaviour? Stuff that's happening, for example, in Limavady already, or Ballycastle or some towns, where people are saying, we have a specialism in languages, you come to us for that in sixth form, and you have a specialism in science, you come to us for those, whatever those might be. But these are just examples of very practical steps that you can take. In terms of, for example, we've been working with district councils around very things that seem kind of small, but, you know, at the moment in Belfast, for example, all of the public events are in the Botanic Gardens. Can we start to share those out a bit? And can we start to say to people, part of the deal is that everybody has to be safe coming here so that people get used to moving around the city? Can we change the transport network so that everything doesn't end at the City Hall, so that people start to have connections across the city and that it's safe to do so? These are very practical things I'm at. But I suppose for us in the Community Relations Council, the key thing is, what is a cohesion, sharing and integration strategy about? It's saying the direction we have to go in everything is maximising the access for people, the openness for people and the opportunities for people to engage on difficult topics. Once you start making that your principle and you start building that in, there are things in education you have to do, there are things in housing we have to do, there are things in culture policy we have to do, there are things in community safety we have to do, there are things in economics we have to do, and I could talk all day, but you asked the question, which is how do we get from here to there? We need to get these ideas into the core of very practical policies to say progress looks like taking the opportunities we have without necessarily forcing people, but certainly taking all the opportunities we have, and over, maybe it's a 10-year period, maybe it's a 20-year period, but in 10 years and 20 years, we look back and we say, what was previously not possible has become normal. And I think we've already got it. In politics, I have to say, I think we have experience of this. My last point. People think good relations is about harmony, some kind of nice new age hum for everybody. And part of the difficulty in Northern Ireland has been that the easiest way to get harmony is to say nothing. is to basically have silence. So a community relations meeting turns out to be a meeting where everybody goes into a room, has a cup of tea, says nothing, says that was a great success, then goes home and says, my goodness, it's what a total waste of time. Okay? Actually, good relations looks like identifying what are the hard questions, putting something around it, getting the right people around the room, finding the context in which you can actually have a constructive conversation, and finding some practical steps. And you know something? On that basis, over the last 20 years, we have made enormous progress. We have dealt with things like paramilitarism, we have dealt with policing, we have dealt with getting constitutional arrangements together, we put up a stormont, we have done a lot. I suppose what I would say to you is, the issue in CSI is now we have an opportunity to start going at the really practical things, the things that make a difference to people, their schools, their way they shop, where people can go, all those kind of things. And that's the key bit. So the answer is, let's get this built into the way we think about things, and we move from A to B by taking a step, moving into it, getting used to it, and then taking the next step. And that's a fairly simple recipe.
He says that was simple. Good Lord. Leslie.
No, it's not simple at all. Yes, of course I agree with that. I'm going to take a slightly different angle. To me, it's about people. It's about individuals, and it's about moving people along, building trust. It's looking at your culture, who you are. And I work with a lot of single identity groups who aren't ready to take the step to looking at more contentious issues and cultures and faiths that are different. So it's working with those people, gaining trust. They learn about themselves, about their own culture, and that's enhanced, and then they're ready to move on. So that's very, very important. You know, at the beginning of the conversation, I said, working with a loyalist estate who are going now to meet Republican prisoners, 6 miles down the road, there is also a community that... I've been working with that are asking me questions, and we're looking at issues that I did 10 years ago. So they are that far behind. So they need to be encouraged. And there are pockets all around Northern Ireland that communities are way, way behind. So there's still a lot of work. And just finally, obviously, community relations budgets should not be cut in any way.
Bill?
I'm going to take a question on a much more focused point. What can we, as the UUP, do for this issue? What we can do, and it was great to listen to the leader speak before lunch with such strength and vigour around the inclusion that he sees, his vision for this party, what unionism really is. As a party, we have an opportunity to take this message to the doors over the next 6 months. And I don't just mean doors of our traditional unionist voters. I don't mean TUV voters, I mean our traditional unionist voters. What we need to do is to take that message out that we're a party that wants to address education. We're a party that wants to address employment. We're a party that wants to address healthcare. It doesn't matter if you're black, you're white, you're Muslim, you're Catholic, you're Protestant. We are a party for Northern Ireland, and we will put Northern Ireland first. What we as the UUP can do is start voicing that we are already there and start getting people to follow us.
Kenny?
Thanks, Ross. Yes, picking up on a thread, I suppose, from Leslie, I do believe that it's very much about human relationships. And no matter what you have coming top down from government, unless there actually is an acknowledgement and a willingness amongst people at a ground level that that is a place where they need to be, they have to make that decision for themselves. And I suppose it's more predominant within the unionist community, and we tend to be a more defensive people. And this old saying that you like to see the colour of your money on Ulsterman. We don't go into things sometimes from a process point of view where you start somewhere and you're not quite sure where you end up. We like to approach things in a contractual way, that I want to see what I'm signing up to, and I want to know where it's going to take me. and almost there has to be a sea change within our thinking if we are to progress in that way. But just to give a few practical examples, I think in recent years, obviously from coming from a point of view of having a particularly difficult relationship with the Republic of Ireland, broadly speaking, unions from right across the spectrum now see that particular nation that's on our doorstep as our neighbour. Now, it doesn't mean to say that we ever want to be part of that nation, but we can have an amicable relationship with them, a responsible relationship, which is of mutual benefit to all of us. So I suppose going forward it has to be at ground level, Rodney, is where I would be coming from. Certainly as a party, we have those messages to put out and about. We have to try and discredit how people try to portray this party, that we're narrow, that we have to be of a particular hue or other to be in it. This party is the most broad church political party in Northern Ireland, and that's to its strength, and that should be represented in the voting base that actually supports this party.
I hope you all noticed that Duncan made reference to Omagh, which is the county town of Tyrone in West Tyrone. And if any of you ever do anything someday, you've nothing better to do, come and see Omagh, the county town of Tyrone. On your behalf, I would like to thank the panel, Kenny, Bill, and Leslie, and I think more importantly, Duncan Morrow from the Community Relations Council. Thank you very much.